Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt are back joining me again, and with us for the week to discuss everything is the man behind Humans of Racing, Kaveh Akbari. Kaveh, how are you? And then I'll turn it over to Jess and Matt for how everybody's doing tonight.
Yeah, great. I'm excited to be here. It's not often living in Vegas I get the opportunity to bench race with people with regards to IndyCar, so I'm just excited to have the platform to discuss IndyCar.
Great. And Jess and Matt, how's everybody?
Good. Good. Thanks for joining us, Kaveh.
Yeah, Jess, we don't have to end the episode right now, so plenty of time to go. before we talk IndyCar, Kaveh, Jess has a question, as all of our listeners are probably waiting for it right now, whenever they listen to this, that started when we ran out of questions to ask Joseph Newgarden in our fifth or sixth episode all the way back in January. It's become a tradition. It's on t-shirts that are sitting, I have a couple left sitting on the floor next to me here. So I'm going to start off the interview with turning it over to Jess, and then we'll dive deep into the world of racing this week.
All right. Sounds great.
Go ahead, Jess.
All right, Kaveh. So I have asked this question to many a person now. Have you heard said question, or is this completely a surprise to you?
You know what? I don't know the question, and I'm honestly, my heart's pounding a little bit. I'm a little nervous about what this question's going to be.
You probably should be, because I'm gonna start by telling you I don't ask racing questions. So
okay.
The first question I'm going to ask you, I'm going to give you 400 pounds of Parmesan cheese. What are you going to do with it?
Eat it. What else would you do with it? I'd eat it.
I don't think that's an answer.
If you've ever seen me in person, it makes a lot of sense. I would eat it.
That's definitely the most, I'm probably, other than Christian saying he would donate it to charity, which if everybody knows Christian, you know, is the accurate answer, is the most honest answer we've gotten on this. You know, not I'm going to give it to my wife to cook, or I'm going to eat part of it or anything like that. You're just going, I'm going to eat this cheese and enjoy it. And
pretty much.
I think that's perfect. So listen, before we go wild with all of the news and chat, there's obviously plenty to talk about. I'll turn it over to you to tell everybody what Humans of Racing is real quick, and then I will post a link to the website on our Twitter page as well.
Awesome. Yeah, so Humans of Racing is kind of like a video log and website that I launched to just feature people that work in the racing industry that we don't normally hear about. If you go to any of the big racing websites, like racer.com or motorsport.com, you always read about the race reports and what's going on with drivers, but it's really rare that you see profiles done on the people that work behind the scenes in racing. And having worked in the industry, the IndyCar industry, for about 7 years, there's just so many cool people that I came across with really interesting stories. And when I stepped away from racing, the thing I missed most is just the people and their personalities. And I feel like if people could just get to know these other people as well, there's just a lot of interesting characters throughout the paddock. And, you know, initially I figured my audience would be that race fan that just can't get enough of racing in general. Here's some new content for them to look at. And what I'm finding is a lot of the audience is just people in the paddock that like watching, you know, interviews about other people that they work with or compete against. So it's just been a really cool platform to tell people's stories. And I've been having a lot of fun with it. A lot of mechanics, for example, are kind of shy about being in the camera, but since I've worked with quite a few of them in the past, I feel a little more comfortable working with me directly. And some of the stories that have come out have just been incredible. And there's a lot of content still to come out. And I just can't wait to share all the different stories that I've come across.
Yeah, it's a great follow. I definitely enjoyed the Mario Andretti series, I guess, since it was more than one part. Definitely want to check out. So, you know, I know you mentioned that you were, you know, in the paddock for 7 years, and I think you told me in the past you were Mr. Hinchcliffe's PR guy. Was that your main focus in the years you were, you know, on the scene in racing?
Yeah, so like a lot of people that want to get involved in racing to be a dry end, sure. I did not have the means to make that happen financially, talent, whatever. I never grew up working with tools, so being a mechanic wasn't going to work out. I was terrible in math and science, so I couldn't be an engineer. But, you know, in school, I always did well with writing and journalism and things like that. And I figured that could be a way for me to kind of get into the industry. And so I worked as a publicist. I was an intern. My first job was an intern with Kelly Racing back in 2003. And that was actually a job that Tony Renna hooked me up with. He and I met randomly on a plane, during the winter in between 2002 and 2003. We met on a plane. We kept in touch. And basically, a couple of weeks before the month of May started, I got an email from him saying, hey, our PR gal is looking for an intern. She's expecting a call. Here's her number. And it just kind of went from that one internship to eventually being a director of public relations. My longest tenured team was with Sam Schmidt Motorsports. And so you mentioned working with Hinch. I was working with Sam at a unique time where a lot of talent was coming through. And so the first year I worked with Sam was in 2007. That year we worked with Alex Lloyd, who won the championship that year. And pretty much every year I was there, 2007 to 2010, we always had a driver that was in the mix for the championship. And a lot of great drivers came through that program. Hinch is probably the biggest name, but sure. Other drivers that I worked with that made it to IndyCar included guys like Wade Cunningham, Anna Beatrice, but Hinch was probably the biggest name, and I would say of all the drivers I worked with, he was probably one of the closest that I got on with. So it was a fun time, and definitely a special time in my life that I always look back on with fond memories.
Yeah, great. Thanks for going in all that. Again, humansofracing.com. We'll plug it again at the end. And social media on Twitter, which is right in front of me here, is at humansofracing5. All right, let's dive into all the fun IndyCar chat. We'll make it roundtable like we normally do. Matt, where do you want to start? Iowa recap and discussion?
Yeah, let's start there. We could just kind of – we'll jump into a fan question on part two of the Iowa discussion. But let's start with Jess. Jess, what are your thoughts about the race as a whole? Keeping in mind, we'll probably get to the ending on part two of our conversation. So what were your thoughts about the race in general?
So you don't want me to sign it off yet, right?
I don't know. Do we have any lug nuts anywhere that need tightening anywhere? Anybody?
Not right now. Okay. No, I thought it was good. I don't know what everybody on Twitter was up in arms about, saying that it was boring and there was nothing going on. Obviously, they weren't watching the same race that I was watching. I thought it was fantastic. I thought they were spot on, and I think it was really good.
Yeah, I would. I'd agree with that. I had a great time watching it. You know, even though guys were laps down or a lap down, they were still passing for position. I think I saw, I don't remember who posted it today. There were, you know, obviously 900 and something passes with 250 or 300 passes for position, plenty of intrigue. Obviously, you know, Hinch really, you know, stole the show there in that last stint and, you know, surprised the heck out of Newgarden, which is, you know, if you can surprise a driver like Newgarden in your last stint, you obviously did something right. And then just, you know, kind of, I don't want to say ran away with it there at the end, but he definitely, you know, held his own and came away with a great win. Matt, what about you?
Yeah, I remember turning to my parents at some point in the race, maybe just past halfway. And I looked and we, you know, quick said, you know, like, wow, this is a lot better than it has been the last couple of years. And there was passing everywhere. And from where we sat and where a majority of people sit, you can see all the passes around the track. And yeah, it's just something about the way they were racing just seemed so much better than we've seen in the last couple of years, as evident in the fact that there was, you know, 152% more passes or something thereabouts. And my dad also turned to me 30 laps in the race and said, you know, Hinch is the fastest car out there. And, it, you know, based off his first stint, it was pretty clear that he was going to have a really strong race. So it was really cool to see Hinch kind of have to do it the hard way. I know there was a yellow there in the middle. But to really kind of track down Newgarden, who had a good fourth lap lead on that last stint where Hinch passed him. That was really cool to see. So it was a good win for Hinch. It's the second time he's won there. You know, to me, you know, especially I'm never not going to go to Iowa, but knowing that the product is better this year than it was last year is great. And hopefully we'll get to that Saturday night race next year.
Yeah, that would be great. Kaveh, your thoughts, opinions?
You know, I think the race had everything that you would want out of an oval race. An IndyCar oval race, the fastest guy won, period. The fastest guy had to come through the field, as someone mentioned, the hard way. You could still see guys running side by side. He had the close racing. It's exciting just to see the leaders having to navigate traffic. It's not just foot to the floor, kind of a chess match sort of thing. It was really a lot of strategy involved in trying to maneuver, how you're going to set your passes and get through traffic. I'll say at the end, with that last caution, that debate, do you pit, do you not pit? I was watching the race with my little boy who just loves James Hinchcliffe. And there was a moment where everyone started pitting and James did not. And I started kind of managing my kids' expectations, just thinking back to Phoenix, how new tires were the way to go, and James did not get new tires. So just trying to manage his expectations, like, you know, he's going to have a really hard time winning the race now, so let's not get too excited. And it ended up being a moot point with the race just ending under caution. But even if the race didn't end under caution, at the end of the day, the fastest guy won the race. And I think anytime the fastest guy wins a race, whether it's a road course or an oval, and they worked hard and they earned it, I don't think you could really be disappointed with that sort of result.
Yeah, very well said. And the video of your son losing his mind when Hinch won the race definitely was the video of the weekend.
Yeah.
And to all the people, you know, disappointed, you know, when you have multiple cars that are just so dialed in that they're lapping other cars, you know, one of the things that, you know, IndyCar drivers and fans wanted was a car that made the drivers work. And I think Iowa was the perfect example of everybody was working hard. You know, you had guys like Scott Dixon in 11th place working hard just to stay a lap down or on the lead lap. And I thought there was action the whole time. And, you know, I guess we'll transition into the last few laps of the race there with that caution flag. I know there's a fan question in here, Matt, so it's stop me if I start talking too much.
Well, guess who asked it?
It's our buddy George, right?
Our buddy George.
Yes. Again, for those who maybe haven't listened, at Butts is Nuts 4, George Butts always asks a couple questions every week, so thank you, George. And yes, Kaveh, that is his actual Twitter handle. Probably one of my favorite ones. So go ahead, Matt. Go with his question, then we'll keep talking here.
Yeah, just ask for opinions on the finishing procedures there at Iowa and how they kind of played out. I'll put myself on the spot and say, you know, the case study, I believe, was Iowa 2013 or 14. The one where Hunter Ray pitted, and even though the Kanaan, so it was 2014, because Kanaan had dominated the race in the Ganassi car, but because of a late yellow, Hunter Ray and Newgarden pitted for tires, and Kanaan didn't, and Kanaan got swarmed, even though Kanaan had the best car. And so the thought process was, when Ed Carpenter had his incident with Sato a couple laps ago, that if you pit for new tires, you're going to be able to carve your way through the field, and lap traffic was going to go to the back because it was under 20 laps to go, or 5 laps to go, or whatever it is. And there was apparently there was a miscommunication about if they were actually going to go back to green. Carpenter's incident had a lot more debris than they originally thought, so it took a little longer to clean up. So when guys pitted and came back with fresh tires, they were shuffled to the back, and then it just went white and yellow, so there was no restart. So would I have pitted? I don't know. I don't think I would have, with even if they had gone to green, it would have been like a lap or two. So that's, you got to really haul the freight to get up there. But, you know, in Jay Fry We Trust, he came out with a pretty rational response afterwards, and it seemed like there was no guarantee of going back to green. So I understand why teams were frustrated, like Newgarden and Wickens, but I wouldn't have pitted if that were me. What do you think, Kaveh?
You know, that's a tough situation. A precedent has been set in the past where if there's a yellow flag with, you know, less than 10 to go, I want to say it was at Indy a few years ago, they threw a red flag. And so when do you arbitrarily decide, yes, we're going to stop the race, or yes, we're going to go yellow, or what's the procedure to guarantee a green flag finish? You know, I'm an old school guy. If the race is advertised as, say, a 300 lap race, then it's a 300 lap race, period. But there, I think there does need to be a little more clarity between the teams and the series as to what the procedures will be in getting a race restarted, you know, that late in the race. A guy like Newgarden, who probably made the right decision, I think, if they were expecting the race to go green, to pit and get tires. Because typically with less than 10 laps to go, the lead lap cars are sent to the back of the field. And I think there was only 5 cars in the lead lap. So why wouldn't you take new tires? You have nothing to lose, really. It's not the first time this year where we've heard drivers complain about lack of clarity with restart procedures at the end of the race. And I think it's a shame that that becomes a talking point at all after a great race. So I just think there needs to be more understanding between the teams and the series. The teams want to maximize their finishes, which is understandable. The series wants to give the fans the greatest show that they can. There's a lot of things at play. And I think maybe there just needs to be a sit down to take a look and say, hey, what do we do moving forward so we don't have this situation occur again?
Yeah, I think clarity would go a long way there. But the one thing I definitely don't want to see that a few people mentioned, well, not a lot, but there were a handful of people that mentioned, the one I saw, I think it was on Facebook, of course, was a 3-lap overtime. No, if it's 300 laps, it's 300 laps. And, you know, yes, was it a little confusing on if they were going back to green? You know, just following the TV announcers, yeah, there was a little bit of wonder, but it seemed to me, it seemed tough that they would go back to green just based on the fact that, you know, when Newgarden and Wickens pitted, there was only 3 laps left, maybe 4 laps left, and it just didn't seem like they were going to be able to get everything organized in 4 laps. I don't have any problem with the finish, you know, it finishing under yellow. I'd, again, rather that than some sort of overtime or, you know, green, white, checkered debate, you know, whatever. I definitely don't want to see anything like that. But yes, it would have been nice to, you know, have some sort of clear guideline on red flag or not red flag based on X, Y, and Z conditions. But then again, you know, like Matt mentioned, Jay Fry's reply post-race was, I think, to the point, honest, and I have no problem with at least anything he said there. Jess, what about you?
Yeah, I think he was very clear. I mean, he said it was their mistake. They thought they were going to be able to go green, and it just didn't happen. Excuse me. But I agree. I don't want green, white, checkered. I am, as Kaveh said, old school. If it's advertised as 300 laps, it should be 300 laps. Let's not go toward the gimmicks, for instance, that NASCAR uses. I just don't see a point in it. I think that, you know, the fans should appreciate the race for what it was. And yeah, unfortunately there was an incident and it caused things to go sideways at the end, but the person who won should have won. So I think most people can be okay with the ending.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely, you know, when Newgarden and Wickens pitted and you thought, okay, that to me was okay, maybe they are going back to green. And then I, you know, as Kaveh said to his son, thought to myself, oh man, Hinch is going to have a tough one when in here. But we all know how it worked out. And I think we all pretty much agree on that one. I think most IndyCar fans agree we don't need any sort of, you know, gimmicks or overtimes or whatever you want to call them. It's not the first race that has ever ended under yellow. I don't even think it's the first one this year. I think there was one earlier this year that ended under yellow. Maybe it was, I don't know.
Well, it's also just annoying that every time it ends under yellow, we have to have the stupid debate on Twitter.
Yes, that is also true. It does get out of control. I had to leave some unnamed Facebook groups because I couldn't take the ridiculousness of the three lap overtime debate.
Cough, Hamby, cough.
Yeah. So, you know, enough was enough for my sanity on that one. Moving on, you know, props to Hinch on a great race and Newgarden for thoroughly dominating most of the race and coming up short. And the one thing, you know, before we move on to anything else, that while I am not often wrong, I do have to admit when I am wrong. Last week when we were talking about Spencer Pigot, I said, I don't know if he can finish in the top 10 because he's struggled a little bit and Carpenter, racing outside of Indianapolis has had a little bit of a rough year, and then he finishes in third place. So, and he drove a great race. So, Jess was right and I was wrong. And I won't admit that one too often, especially while we're recording. But Jess, I will admit that you were right on this one.
Yes, I was wrong. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for that. I don't know.
I win! Yay!
Jess had that crystal ball, I guess. But yeah, huge shout out to Pickett. That was a great race, and it's a good thing that I didn't bet that Jess could take over my Twitter handle for a day and tweet whatever she wanted. So there's that. Or I can't remember, someone bet with me once and they got to change my Twitter profile picture for a day. So
yeah. Did you have to wear like a Packers jersey or something?
I don't know. I don't know if it was my buddy David, but I think he got to change it to something Packers related or Danica related or something Elio related, or I don't know. But props to you, Jess.
All right, let's see here, Matt, what do you want to do next? A fan question?
Sure. Just a quick shout out though to, Jim Myers at GTR365, who had also kind of asked our viewpoints on, the finish there and if race control did enough or was transparent enough for our liking. So we appreciate you chiming in there, Jim. We will go to a dual fan question, which is kind of the next hot topic. And so, before we get to, it'll be like another two-part question here, I guess. What is everybody's thoughts about pretty much the biggest news story from after the race, which is that Harding Racing has opted to put Gabby Chavez on the sideline, but he's still with the team under contract for this year and next year. He just won't be racing the rest of the year. And so Connor Daly is stepping into that seat for Toronto only. No driver decisions have been made yet, so we'll get to that part on part two. But what are you guys' thoughts about Chavez out and Daly in for the race at Toronto, since Mike is going up to A-land? We'll start with him.
Man, that one, you know, when Nick Yeoman tweeted that there was you know, potential for a driver change leading to the weekend, obviously we were all talking about it for, you know, 24 hours or so. And, you know, Chavez was mentioned by a few people, but I really just didn't see it because I knew he was under contract for, you know, this year and next year. Obviously, we all guessed Rene Binder, because he hasn't particularly done all that much this year. Nonetheless, it's obviously Chavez for Connor Daly. You know, very happy for Connor Daly. Nobody's more deserving of, you know, getting a chance whenever he can, and hopefully he can parlay this into a yeah, pun intended there.
I was gonna say, you just said deserved and parlay in the same sentence. I don't know. I'm fainting right now.
You know, it's definitely you know, well earned, and you know, he was the 2017 fan vote driver of the year, so I'm sure the you know, anybody who might have been on the fence about going to the race is now, you know, going to the race if they're a Connor Daly fan. So happy for him. It kind of stinks for Chavez. I know he hasn't particularly had a great year, but you know, you want to be in that car, especially as you, you know, learn this new aero kit before, you know, 2019 comes around and you're not, you know, the new team on the block anymore. I don't know. It's a weird situation that he's, you know, he's like benched, but he's not going anywhere, but they're still going to evaluate other options for a potential second car for the rest of the year. And my worry would be if they, you know, evaluate, I don't know, let's just say three or four other drivers, maybe an Indy Lights driver towards the end of the year when their season ends, and then they decide, you know what, we're not going to do a second car. Does that hurt Gabby Chavez next year? It certainly could. So I'm happy for Connor, but I guess I would say I'm a little confused by the decision. What about you, Matt?
Yeah, obviously super stoked for Connor. Although it's completely contrary to what we had just said in our last episode, how I think, well, and this is a little different since it's mid-season and someone knocks on your door and says, hey, come drive our car. You pretty much got to say yes when you got nothing else lined up for the year. But if this leverages into a second Harding seat next year, I'm a little nervous because this seems like, you know, same, you know what, different day. But I think, you know, I think I'll save my thoughts on it till the end of the episode. But what do you think, Kaveh?
You know, it's a really tough situation. And having interacted with a lot of guys on the Harding Racing crew, it is really a family atmosphere. And so this decision was not one that was made lightly. I'm sure a lot of consideration went into it. There's been a lot of changes there recently in the engineering department. And, you know, we first of all have to give credit to Gabby in that this is a new team. The last thing they need is to crash cars in the track pretty much every session this year. And so he's been doing his job. At the end of the day, the entire team, Gabby included, wants to go faster. And so there's only so many things with the current If Connor gets in there and, well, basically gets the same result, he is at a disadvantage in that he hasn't had much time for the team. But they were well off the pace at Road America. You know, then you can kind of just cross that thing off the list and say, you know, it's not the driver. There's something else. And, you know, a small team like this, they need to do whatever they can to gather data. Definitely sucks with Gabby. He has been a team player in everything he said. Obviously, he's been upset. But I don't think anyone's going to be too disappointed if Connor's the guy that's replacing him. If Gabby was being replaced by some guy out of F2 who nobody's heard of, I think it'd be a little more ruckus, especially the American guy who just caused the storm over the weekend. But, you know, it's Connor Daly, and, you know, I don't think people are going to be too disappointed on that. So it's a tough situation, but hopefully it works out well for all parties involved.
Yeah, I think well said all around there. Jess?
I, like everybody else, I'm excited for Connor. I think it's a good way to show what his skills are. I don't want to use the D word because I don't want it. I don't want to make somebody unhappy.
Mike.
But I think that he
stupid me.
He is okay. I mean, he's good. He's probably an ideal pick for them, just because of the fact that he is so popular with the fans. It'll make people notice them more, for lack of a better way of putting it. But as far as it goes for Gabby, I can only imagine that he feels crushed. You know, he's been driving as well as he can with the equipment he has been given. He's not crashed. He's not done anything wrong, really, other than maybe the little tiff with Pagano. But other than that, he's had a pretty good year, all things considered. I mean, yeah, I know that he's not winning races and he's not been super high up there, but he's in a team that's brand new. They're learning the car. They're learning each other, everything else. I give him props. So I feel really bad for him. I definitely don't think this is what he needed to make his year next year go any better. So it'll be interesting to see how it works out.
And I think there's a part two to this question, correct, Matt?
Yes. So we had two people want to know our opinions on this. The first was Greg, who's at Lone Wolf GAM, and our buddy George Butts is nuts. George and both George and Greg wanted to know kind of our thoughts of the post Toronto Harding situation and any of the drivers we'd like to see. One of them sprouted up on Twitter. The most obvious candidate for is, I think, Mid Ohio is the next race after Toronto, right? I believe.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So the most obvious candidate for Mid Ohio would be RC Enerson. Given his success there, he had in his first ever race with Dale Coyne in 16. And he actually was very successful there in Indy Lights as well. So if Harding is truly going at a race-by-race basis, Enerson would make the most sense at Mid-Ohio. And then from there, you can pretty much throw darts at a board and try to figure out who would be next. A couple names would be maybe guys like depending how loyal they are to Dryan Reinbold, J.R. Hildebrand, or Sage Karam. If Reinbold's really going full-time next year and they know that, then they probably shouldn't. But if there's any doubt that this is actually going to happen, maybe they got to look at doing something else. Indy Lights guys have been thrown around, the biggest of which were Colton Herta, Pato O'Ward, Santi Arutia, Aaron Tielitz. Beyond that, you could also just maybe get a completely random one, or, you know, this is Clayman DeMello's last race with Coyne for the year, then Pietro Fittipaldi stepping back in. So it could easily be Clayman DeMello. You just don't know. It's kind of out of left field. But the one I really want to see would probably be RC Enerson, especially at Mid-Ohio. What about you, Jess?
So the only bad thing about RC would be if they're using this truly as a test to test out drivers for full time, is that we all know he can do well in Mid-Ohio already. So maybe put him at a track that he hasn't done before later in the season. But yeah, I think that Colton Herta, really any of the guys that are doing well in lights would be a good choice. Man, it has been the year of absolute left field. So I don't even know where to go with this, honestly, because remember what is this year the year of who? So I feel like we might see some more what moments.
I'll turn it over to Kaveh before I give my opinion here.
You know, there's, in a good way, I guess I could say there's no, like, superstars out of work that I could think of off the top of my head. Someone mentioned RC Anderson earlier. He did great there a couple years ago with Clean Lane. You know who's pretty good at Mid-Ohio? I don't think he's realistically in the frame to get in the seat, but someone that's been good in Mid-Ohio in the past is James Davison. For whatever reason, he hasn't had a proper opportunity in the IndyCar series. Maybe some of it is because of his own doing. I don't know. But he has always been a really fast driver at that track in Indy Lights and pretty much anything he's climbed into at that track. So if we're talking about people out of left field, maybe him. Otherwise, I really have no clue. Probably someone from Indy Lights or maybe from someone from Europe, but who knows?
Well, I can tell you one thing. It's probably not going to be Santino Ferrucci. I'll say that with confidence. But we'll save that for later. Obviously I would like it to be RC Anderson since, his sponsor is our pals at Sound Cue Audio, or one of the sponsors, who also sponsor us. So, it'd be cool to see him and, you know, maybe if he is at Mid-Ohio, I get Jess's, view there, but he can help Harding, build a sound program for, such a course. But if we're going to have to go, the rest of the year, Matt brings up a good point with Clayman DiMello, and then obviously, the Indy Lights drivers, any of the ones already mentioned could easily take over. And listen, I'm sure there's some other F2 driver or Formula something driver somewhere in the world that, is bristling for the opportunity. I know, sports car driver, I forget his first name, but his last name is Braun. Colin Braun, thank you, Matt, that mentioned today that he was interested in IndyCar. Maybe he can squeeze in one of these last, after this week, five races remaining. So I guess we'll see. It's if I'm going to pick, I'm going to say RC from Mid-Ohio, and then, somebody out of left field for a race or two. And then once the Indy Lights season ends, I know Pato has plenty of money from his Mexico sponsorship, so he could help out the Harding group there. All right, moving on from that. Jess, do you want to go with your Stump the Hosts?
Absolutely. Are you ready?
Yes. Probably not.
Yeah, probably not. I'm throwing it way back again, but this is one that you guys actually have a chance on, okay?
Kaveh, feel free to join in too.
Yeah, so okay. I'm throwing it way, way back. I'm throwing it back to the first 500 again. So in the first 500, there was a safety feature that was used on Ray Haroon's Marmon Wasp car that is still used today in our commercial vehicles.
I know this.
It was the very first time that it was used.
I know this.
What was it?
Matt, I'll let
just
you
shout it out, or
no? Yeah, go for it. Yeah, you're the guest. You're the guest. Go for it.
I'm going to guess the rear view mirror.
Yeah.
Correct. Yay.
In a couple weeks, when I have a fancy soundboard, I'll be able to click a button that has like the audience clapping. But until then. Jess, you lose.
Is this like Jim Cramer style soundboard?
Yeah, but you guys are way better than like the last time I did something.
Yes. Yeah. Jess's last Stump the Host was how many horse posts were at the track for the first Indy 500. and I think I was closer than Matt. I'm pretty sure the answer was 3,000. And I guess 2,000. And Matt guessed like 17,000.
No, that was Mr. Faux Willpower.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
We played Price is Right, and I got like 5, and Faux Will said 10. 7 or 10.
All right, so we'll save our last fan question here for in a little bit. A little bit of news, Dragon Racing, mentioned that they are very interested in IndyCar, whether it be a technical partnership with the team or on a part-time schedule. And
quick question, Dragon Speed. So Dragon different Speed, than sorry. Different than
not Dragon Racing. I wrote that down wrong. My bad. Dragon Speed Racing, currently in IMSA, I believe. And they have mentioned as well that, you know, they are not looking for a pay driver. They want, you know, they want their pick of, you know, whoever they want, which is, you know, nice to know that it's not going to go to, you know, whoever is just bringing the most money to the table. You know, that's pretty much it on that one. I don't think there was too much news. Oh, one interesting debate point that I think Matt wrote on Twitter the other day is, or yeah, I think it was Matt, how terrible AJ Foyt Racing is at Iowa. Matt, I'll let you start that one.
Well, I mean, AJ Foyt Racing as a whole is pretty awful. Just looking at the statistics, but last year they kind of sucked everywhere, but especially right. at Iowa, their cars finished last and second to last. And so, if you look at a black and white coming into Iowa, a lot of people picked Kanaan and Fantasy IndyCar, and I just didn't see it. I know Kanaan is one of the best oval drivers ever, and especially at Iowa, he's led, you know, what'd you say, like 400, 500 laps there or something like that last week?
Yeah, 477 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
So obviously he's a gifted driver in Iowa, won there, crashed the first two or three years, but, you know, overcame that, became a great driver there. And to see him struggle and finish eight laps down, and see Laced retire for some sort of mechanical reason, and he was last anyways on merit, not on some strategy, like he was just legitimately last. It's hard to imagine if Kanaan can't help the team figure it out there. I don't know what they're missing, but it was very painful to watch. So hopefully, especially with Kanaan at Indy, and even at Texas, he was running very well until he hit the wall both times. So you thought maybe they would have something, but it was just a train wreck. So it kind of falls past form there, and like I said, they really need to figure it out there, especially if they have a guy like Kanaan that they can use to their advantage. There's no way they should be as slow as they were.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think I picked Kanaan in Fantasy IndyCar, but I don't think my picks had that good of a race anyway. yeah, it's a tough one. I know Foyt hasn't, you know, been the strongest team, putting it lightly, but to see how bad they struggled at Iowa last year, and you know, Leist, you know, going around the track a few times, and then you know, the team deciding to call it a day because of some mechanical issue or they just didn't have the handling, was definitely another disappointment in the string of Foyt disappointments. Moving on, let's go with the last fan question here as we hit the 45-ish minute mark.
And it looks like it's from our buddy George again. Last week it was our favorite liveries of all time. Now our buddy George wants to know what our least favorite liveries of all time are. We'll turn it to anybody. I'm not going to throw anybody on the spot here.
That's a tough one.
All the matching.
You know, I. You know, I worked with Dreyer and Reinbold in 2008, and I have to say, if you look up Buddy Rice's car from that year, it was pretty. It was weird because it was a white car with blue trim, but then black lettering, and it just didn't go together. And, you know, I personally put some of the decals on that car and it just didn't make sense to me. And it's not a car like when you think of Indy lore, this is an Indy 500 winner. When you think of Buddy Rice, you don't think of him driving that car just because it was so forgettable. So I would say that's probably my vote.
My vote would be the Tony Kanaan Taylor Swift car at Detroit, in 2015, I believe. Nothing against, T Swift, I don't know. It's just not my style. I'll keep it simple and just, yeah, that one I definitely did not like. But looking at Buddy Rice 2008 is a very confusing scheme as well.
Yeah.
Jess?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Matt. If you got one, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd say anything with the initials AFS on the side of it, it really bugs me. The Vader's out there squandering another opportunity. As far as paint schemes go, you know, last week I had said Saavedra and that blue car was one of my favorites. Well, actually, if anybody hasn't seen a picture of what that car looked like for the next couple days after that blue chrome exploded, it was hideous. It was just this plain white car with like a brown airbrushing of true car on the side. So that was pretty terrible. And I don't know, like when Bordeaux had the black and red hydroxy cut car with KV, I liked the one that Kanaan ran in 13. I loved the one that Bordeaux ran in 14, I believe, with the black and green hydroxy cut. But then when it came to 15, you had the black and red. That just didn't like pop to me and it didn't look that great. So we'll have to post pictures of all these later on social media. What do you got, Jim?
I've got another one if Jeff needs a minute.
Go ahead. Yeah, that's fine.
Speaking of Buddy Rice, and Buddy Rice's 2008 Indy 500 car was Dad's Root Beer.
There was Dad's Root Beer, and there was also a late sponsorship edition with Jordache, and so we had this random horse head on the side pod. It was like something out of The Godfather.
You're not slandering the Dad's Root Beer car, though, are you?
I'm not a big fan of the random yellow stripe down the side.
Maybe especially
with the horse head. The horse head is very scary. Feels like like Game of Thrones type logo thing there. But I will turn it over to Jess now.
I love that Dad's Root Beer car. So back off.
Can you specify IndyCar or just worst of all time?
Well, let's keep it IndyCar. Unless you got like a.
Oh, come on, because I have a really good one.
You have an honorable mention?
I do.
Go for it.
Kyle Busch's pink kitten and seal car.
All right, that's fair.
And I really don't even know who the hell the sponsor was. So on that one, I've got no idea. Worst IndyCar, I might have to go with. Oh, gosh. I don't even know. Like the all-matching Penske's are pretty terrible because you can't tell them apart. And that's just frustrating as a fan. But I don't know. As far as bad ones, there's a couple that could be up there. I think there was a gold Miller car. Was it? I don't remember who it was. It was like way back, though.
Oh, with like Danny Sullivan back in the day?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was just a really bad shade of gold. Like,
it was even worse.
I don't know. I didn't like that one.
It was even worse when Penske brought it back and then just threw Shell on the side like a couple years ago. That was even worse.
Yeah. It's just that like, I like gold, but just that terrible. It's not even like gold and it's not bronze either. It's like in between. I don't know. So any of those cars, I don't like them.
That's fair. Moving on, Matt, do we have anything left to get to before the pitfalls?
Yeah, so it's something I've just been kind of talking about on Twitter. Now that I've caught up with my driver ratings to 2018, I've started to I just picked a year at random and went back to 1986 to restart the ratings. And I've just been having some discussions on Twitter, and I wanted to kind of pick your guys' brains about it. With the racing in the 80s, and, you know, maybe part of the problem is that I have to listen to Robin Miller talk about how great it is every other week. to me, there isn't a lot of lure to a guy going out there leading, you know, I just watched the 87 500, Mario Andretti leading 170 laps. And then, you know, completely dominating the field and has a mechanical failure with 20 laps to go that he had no control over. And 8 or 9 cars finished that race or something ridiculous like that out of the 33 that started. we don't get too much of that nowadays. The last one I can remember was Fontana in 13 when we had 8 or 7 cars finished, or Texas last year we had 8 or 7 cars finished just because of crashing. So when I'm watching these, it just doesn't do a whole lot for me. I'm really looking forward to getting like the mid to late 90s kart era. But from your guys' point of view, like, does, when we talk about the glories days, would you put the 1980s kart era racing in that? We'll put that to anybody who wants to answer.
Jess, go ahead.
Okay. So, Mike, you had dinner with my dad.
I did.
So, I don't know if you remember his story when we were having dinner, but I used to sit in the stands at the 500 for practice or the race, either one, and I would close my eyes and I would listen to the cars, and I could pick out every single car who's going to go out for mechanical failure without
That's
fail.
Cool.
I was like 6 when
she was,
I started.
She was
doing
a kid
this.
Genius.
That explains this pig thing.
Yeah. So I don't know that I call it the glory days, but I remember it vividly. And the failures, I know you weren't a fan of. You've mentioned it on your Twitter before, but I think it was an interesting twist that we don't see anymore. You know, I mean, we do, but it's very rare, and it didn't used to be quite so rare. So I think it added something to it. Do I call it the glory days? No, I don't. I definitely go back, you know, to the 60s. Or even the 50s, when guys would go, they work at Allison, they would walk over to the Speedway, qualify a car, and then walk back to Allison to finish their shift. Like, those were the glory days of the Speedway, especially. But as far as racing in general goes, I don't think the 80s, probably, probably the 60s or thereabouts.
Yeah, I think, you know, to the point about mechanical failures, obviously they're more rare nowadays, which I think is a good thing. You know, it makes it, you know, when, you know, something like Will Powers start at Road America, or, you know, something like that, when it does happen, it's you know, I don't want to say more dramatic, but, you know, it's much more of a shock. You know, the 80s, when you had 7 or 8 cars, like a couple races that, Matt, I saw you post on Twitter about, there were only 8 or 9 cars finishing, but I don't think I would have preferred that. And speaking of glory days, you know, definitely agree with Jess, as, you know, Jess just mentioned, at that same dinner when my dad was talking about, you know, guys like, you know, Johnny Rutherford and AJ Foyt hanging out in, you know, my grandpa's house outside of Trenton Speedway. You know, you don't see too many things like that nowadays. Not to say that IndyCar isn't welcoming. It's definitely more welcoming than most other racing series. But just, you know, different times back then. And But I do prefer less mechanical failures than, you know, the 80s, when guys were just dropping out left and right.
Can I chime in?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, so I think the intrigue of whether or not a car is going to finish is if that car has some new technology that makes them super fast. So you go back to Mercedes in 94 at Indy, like, they should win, but is this thing going to hold on? Now you're truly testing, you know, the limits of speed. If you just have random mechanical failures because the product is garbage, and I'm thinking to like the IRL in 97, where engines would leave pit lane and then blow up, that's not exciting. But if a guy is just dominating a race, and you just have that question in the back of your mind, is it going to hold on? That adds some excitement. And I think, you know, for me growing up in the 90s, that's kind of my golden era, because, you know, if you look at the kart side, you had 4 engine manufacturers at one point or another have a period of dominance. They were all pushing the envelope. Yeah, there were some failures, but it was because they were pushing for ultimate speed, not because they were unreliable. And so that's sort of, you know, technology is what I would call the golden era. but I thought about this question myself, and I think the golden era for a lot of people is just when they were a kid watching races. For me, it was the 90s. Just sound like in the 80s it was for you. So I guess it just kind of depends. If someone grew up in the 60s, that's their golden era. You know, it's just all kind of relative.
I guess in me, kind of, I see what you and everybody else is kind of saying. So to me, I guess watching that live I would have been on pins and needles. But just knowing, like, you know, because when I'm doing the ratings, I have the results right in front of me, and it's like, you know, I see Mario Andretti's finishing 15th, but he led 170 laps. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, I feel so bad for the guy. But, you know, I totally get what you're saying about the pushing the envelope, and, you know, maybe Newman Haas was doing something they shouldn't have, or maybe his engine wasn't doing something they shouldn't have, or his engineers weren't doing something they shouldn't have. So, yeah, I totally get where you're coming from.
With that, quick shout out before we get to the pitfalls. Yeah, thank you to SoundCue Audio for their continued sponsorship. Probably next week you'll be able to put in code Pitlane Parlay on their website for headphones and speakers, and it'll get you entered into winning some Pit and Paddock passes, maybe an NGA Fry We Trust shirt, or some Pitlane Parlay stickers that I think I get in the mail tomorrow. And obviously, you know, continue to listen to the show on wildfireradio.com. I'll be spending a couple of days in a few weeks with those guys, going over a bunch of things and how to improve, you know, their station, get us some more listeners and new IndyCar fans as well. So check that out. We're live on there Fridays, 3:15, 4:15 Eastern. And with that, we'll get to the pitfalls. And just since Kaveh is new, this is a time for us to, I don't want to say make fun of, but criticize something, whether it be IndyCar or another form of racing. Feel free to add your own if you want, or if you just want to give opinions on everybody else's, that works as well. Sure. I'll start. I think mine is probably the easiest and the shortest one. It's kind of a two-parter. One is a picture that I think either Ryan Blaney posted of him signing autographs for fans and saying how much he likes to hang out with fans behind what looks to be like a bank teller's plate glass window. I don't really see too much excitement in that. And two, Stuart Haas Racing tweeting that NASCAR was the most fan-friendly form of racing out there. Exactly. That's exactly what I did when I read that, which points to my whole, you know, bank teller plate glass window signing autographs, and you try to take a selfie with the driver, and, you know, you just get a reflection of yourself because of the glass. And everybody who replied to that tweet, which was almost every one of my followers on social media, and the podcast social media, with pictures, you know, of, you know, taking selfies with the BorgWarner trophy, or, you know, Newgarden right after he's won a race, or, you know, whoever right after they've won a race. And, you know, IndyCar drivers are so friendly up and down the paddock, even on a bad day. So I don't mean to be rude to Stuart Haas Racing, but I'm not really sure they are even close to accurate on that one. And I'm just going to leave it simply at that.
Can I throw something in
here?
You know,
they...
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kaveh. Just real quick. I met Tony Stewart one time. And do you want to know where I met him at? I met him at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway during the month of May. So I don't see it. I can't believe that his team of all teams is tweeting it, but okay. So that's my only thought. Go ahead, Kaveh.
I was just going to ask, you know, I saw the thread in a sense, I was kind of overwhelmed by the responses that were being posted, that I just kind of stopped reading it. I'm curious if Stuart Haas ever posted like a rebuttal or examples of photos of them doing something awesome for the fans, or did they just kind of bury their head in the sand on that one?
Jess and I are both shaking our heads.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they just buried their head in the sand and pretended it happened.
Foot and mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the response is, I mean, I saw when they posted that live, and I mean, it was, you know, 5 minutes later, there were, you know, 3 or 4 dozen people posting selfies of, you know, them with Roger Penske or, you know, Mario Andretti or any of these guys. And mm-hmm. you know, that's what makes it to me so fun to do this, is to interact with drivers or, you know, team guys that we've had on the show, or, you know, talk to people at the track. Unless they're, you know, running to a meeting. I mean, even then, Newgarden got 5 minutes taken off of a practice time because he was talking to a fan. I think that says enough about IndyCar, you know, drivers and their, you know, friendliness and accessibility. And, you know, guys like, you know, we had on a month or so ago, Mike Hull, who always talks to fans, and Penske takes pictures, and Mario Andretti is still driving around. I think we could go on with a bazillion examples and take up plenty of time here. So, Matt or Jess, I'll turn it over to either of you guys.
We got
to
save Jess for last. Okay. So quick shout. I just want to say, Kaveh, thanks for joining us tonight. You've been awesome to have on the show. Thanks for taking time to come on and with us. Real quick.
Thanks for having me. I had a blast.
Yeah. In case anybody's interested, Danica Patrick's only TV show she watched growing up was Scooby-Doo. moving on to my pitfall. Kind of how we talked about earlier with Harding Racing. I don't understand the thought process to a degree as far as them taking out Chavez to try out talent for next year when they want to expand to a second car. To me, I think it would have made a lot more sense to, I don't know, like the financial side of things, obviously. But if you're going to go, if you're going to be committed to doing that, I would rather have just seen them add a second car for maybe one or two races. I don't even know if they had to do the whole last six rounds. But to me, taking Chavez out, the guy who you're building your team around, where he could be valuably learning setups and whatnot at tracks. I mean, he's done, his best race of his career was at Pocono his rookie season. So it's kind of a bummer that he won't even be there. I would have much rather seen them add a second car for the last six rounds. You know, if you bring in Connor Daly and he crashes on the third lap of the race, not only did you not learn anything, but it's going to reflect poorly on Connor. And that goes for the other five drivers. So I don't get the thought process to an extent. It will be interesting to see how the drivers who come in pace stacks up against Chavez. It'll be, you know, interesting to see if this was a Harding issue or Chavez issue or a bit of both. But I would have much rather them just stuck it out with Chavez and maybe bring in a guy or two during a test session. I believe there's always like a test at Sonoma before the season ends.
Yeah.
Or even just like have Connor in the pits and kind of just get him familiar with the situation. And then, or maybe even, because in Formula One, sometimes they have a guy do free practice one of their test drivers do free practice one, and then Chavez the rest of the weekend. So I don't necessarily agree with it. I feel bad for Chavez, but it's kind of one of those racing deals. And that's kind of my pitfall of the week, because I don't agree with what they did, to be honest.
That's fair. Obviously, my thoughts were early in the episode, so I won't worry about that. Anybody else have any opinions, or should we get to Jess's, which we've alluded to a few times this week?
Well, first, let's see if
I want to get to that topic. What's that?
Do you have a pitfall?
You know, I will say that there's a lot of journalists, and one in particular that seem to be stuck in the past. Not any big name journalist necessarily, but there was a confrontation between a certain journalist and Townsend Bell on Twitter, where Townsend was accused of not knowing his facts, not knowing the institution. And what offended this person was Townsend referring to Robert Wickens as probably one of the quickest learning oval drivers ever. And someone brought up the issue of Nigel Mansell and how well he did back in his time. And a lot of people feel like, you know, we mentioned the golden era before. I think we're in a golden era right now. And I think some people are still stuck in the past in the way things were, that they're overseeing the greatness that's happening right in front of us today. Who knows where Robert Wickens is going to be 5 years from now, but we're watching a guy like him blossom today. We're seeing a guy like Scott Dixon, who is a Hall of Famer. He's still in his prime, and we get to see that today. And a lot of people just miss out on the awesomeness of what's going on today just because they're dwelling on how things used to be. And I really think they're just cheating themselves out of a good time in the present.
Yeah, I think, the unnamed big journalist you mentioned that might do that from time to time. Yes, for sure. And, I won't call out the other guy you mentioned because I just looked it up. I haven't looked at Twitter.
Yeah, I didn't know what he was talking about either until I looked up. That's funny. It's hilarious.
everything you said is very accurate as I scroll through Twitter at the same time here. And with that, Jess, this is probably the best pitfall you've had.
This has to be like a 10-minute.
And break. Make sure just don't end the episode just yet.
Okay, I won't end the episode because I kind of want to talk about this one. So I've been tossing around the idea of bringing the blog back, and it's my fault I didn't do it this week. And actually, it's really good because it gets to be my pitfall now instead of a blog, although I guess I could do both. But my blog was going to be titled, How Do You End Your Career in Racing? And
what are you talking about, Jess?
I don't know. It was gonna feature an American who is, apparently gonna blame his really deep-rooted ancestry on his temper on the track, and his name may be Santino Ferrucci. Wow. Like, of all the excuses you can come up with, and I know he didn't, so please don't jump on me on Twitter. I know he didn't write his apology letter that was not an apology letter. It was an excuse letter. Wow, though. I mean, let's just hit our teammate multiple times on track. I heard somewhere, and I never saw this, so I don't know that this is true or not, but I heard somewhere that after he hit his teammate multiple times on track, he was coming down pit road using a cell phone.
Yeah, he was cited for that.
Okay, yeah, never saw a video. Would love to see a video because that's fantastic.
Agreed.
So there's that, and then there's the whole apology, non-apology letter. And then there's the whole tweets where he made fun of his teammate for being emotional. He just couldn't have had much more of an exciting week than he did. But I can think of a couple other ways that I would like to go out if I were him. He only banged into his teammate twice. He really could have just screwed up the car completely. He could have just gone out and done donuts like somebody in NASCAR who didn't win the race. And there are lots of ways he could have ended his career, but instead he decided to use his cell phone and then make a non-apology. I've seen people kind of defending him, sort of saying, he's talented and he deserves a second chance. Like, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve a second chance, but what I'm saying is he needs to kind of learn a lesson here. He's young, he's dumb, he made mistakes. We've all done it. I signed off the podcast in the middle of the show one time.
Fired.
Yeah, exactly. So, it is what it is. People make mistakes, but his apology, he totally didn't apologize to anyone who actually mattered. My family and my friends, really? You're going to apologize to your family and your friends, but you're not going to apologize to your teammate who you slammed your car into. Okay. Well, that's, you know, like I said, if there's a way to end your career, there you go.
I think you're missing two parts of the story a little bit that.
Well, oh, I forgot the Trump part.
The Trump, he wanted to adorn his car with Make America Great Again stuff on the British Grand Prix, which is always
fantastic.
Cosmic middle finger to the colony or the colonial allies we once had.
Yeah. I forgot that.
And then, did you see the part about him and his father apparently making fun of his teammate?
Yes, Indian accent when they were using the Indian accent.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, so he's racist. And he's a Trump supporter, which explains the racism a little bit. No, please don't attack me on Twitter. Like, no political tweet.
Her Twitter handle is at BakerJM13.
Shut up.
maybe he just got tired of winning.
I honestly think that he just forgot to take his pills that morning. But you never know. I mean, maybe he just went crazy. Yeah, but the FIA said absolutely not when he presented the Trump Make America Great livery, which, thank God, because I can only imagine how that would have gone over. But yeah, I mean, wow.
Yeah, you know, whatever your political stance may be, I think avoiding any sort of Trump slogan on the side of your car is probably a safe bet, especially
in another country, right?
Especially in another country. But we can save that discussion for never. Yeah, you know, I saw the video of him running into his teammate in the cool down lap, and then his tweet that has since been deleted. You know, making fun of his teammate after the race. It's not that this kid did one thing wrong, which you go, he's really dumb. He's a young kid. We all did dumb things when we were that age. I get it. But he did like 57 dumb things in like 24 hours. Like, it's almost like impressive how many mistakes he made in 24 hours. Like, hats off to you, Mr. Santino, or Mr. Ferrucci, whatever your name is. And yeah, the whole, you know, blaming the anger on his Italian heritage. I don't know.
I can't wait to rob a bank with my Irish, American, Italian ancestry.
Yeah.
I'm going to get away with so many crimes.
Yeah. I'm Irish and Scandinavian, so I'm going to wear a Viking hat while I go crazy because I'm Irish. So
you're going to break a Guinness bottle over someone's face at IKEA.
Yes!
Yeah, you know, I just, it's just not well done, and I'm not saying he's gone forever, but it's like I said earlier in the episode, we can definitely say he's probably not going to be in that second Harding car at some point this year.
He totally needs to learn a lesson, and it might take a little bit of time to learn it.
Yeah, just leaving it at that. Kaveh, any opinions before we sign it off?
Yeah, so from a PR perspective, really a good life lesson. If you just like up front own something, say you screwed up, and then say you're sorry, what can anyone say to that? That just ends it. Hey, I screwed up, I'm sorry. And there's really nothing more anyone could say. I mean, if it's a personal problem with a spouse or coworker or something out in the media like this, I screwed up, I'm sorry, then it's over. Everybody can just move on. But you look at examples of, I think I replied to one of your guys' tweets with a picture of Kevin Spacey. Like, when you just dig yourself a deeper and deeper hole and avoid the situation. Roseanne Barr is another example where you make excuses and then eventually apologize. One way or another, you're going to end up apologizing. Just do it up front. Get it over with, and you know what? People just forget about it and move on. But the way that he's just gone out, you know, lighting a fire on his way out, it's not something people are going to forget.
Yeah, very well said, especially from the PR point of view there. And before I let Jess sign it off, we are going to play after Jess signs it off, a short promo from the Race Shop podcast, who focuses solely on dirt racing, which I know is definitely right up Jess's alley. So check it out. It's the Race Shop podcast. So check it out and tune in, and they're going to be playing bits of our episodes at the end of theirs as well. And Jess, you may sign it off.
Are you looking to hear about all of the great stories from sprint car racing and modified racing? Well, look no further than the Race Shop podcast. We cover it all, from dirt track to asphalt to sprint cars to World of Outlaws. You name it, we talk about it. We bring the hard-hitting questions, and we talk about the greatest stories of them all. So don't miss out on the Race Shop podcast on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, and Google Play.